Welcome to Your Permission to Pause, a podcast with uplifting and inspiring content to help driven female leaders who want to work smarter, not harder. Welcome to Your Permission to Pause, episode 2, in the spirit of today's topic, which is creating margin. I am here with some margin in case this is only recording number 3, and I may get up to re-record take 467. Hopefully not. Hopefully we can do it in one, but let's see. I may go off on a tangent again. I may digress, but you know, it all adds to the interest. So, creating margin. Hands up who frequently says, "Oh, I can't today. Got back-to-back meetings. My diary's manic. I just need time to think. I need more space to be strategic." One of my personal favourites actually is, "I'm rammed." I mean, what on earth does that actually mean? I'm rammed. It sounds pretty painful. But these are all things that I frequently hear from clients. I've definitely said myself from time to time, definitely when I was in the corporate world. But even when I became self-employed, one of my favourites used to be, well, my version was, "Oh my God, I'm feeling stressed. I can't see any white space in my diary." You know, my habit was to see some space, go, "Oh, look, I can fill that with something," without really being very intentional about what I was filling it with. And I definitely didn't understand the concept of creating margin. So I was my own worst enemy when it came to creating stress. And it's no wonder I experienced burnout on more than one occasion. So today, let's talk about the concept of creating margin. I don't know how widely used it is really, but it's a phrase that I discovered in an article that a friend sent to me many, many years ago. And I just liked it. It really resonated for me. And it's something that I talk a lot about with my clients now. It can be used interchangeably with creating wiggle room or contingency time, whatever floats your boat. But essentially, it's about the space that we create between our load and our limits. And because time is what most of my clients are craving, and the majority of my one-to-one clients are female, and we're pretty good at filling space, not so good at creating space or even giving ourselves permission for space. And that space can be for a number of things. It can be literal time, I guess, if you want to phrase it that way, but it can also be space for the big feelings and the big emotions. Because if we don't create that margin and space for those kind of things, we don't really show up as the best version of ourselves. And if we're leading a team or even leading our families, then we're not actually giving them the best of us. We're giving them what's left of us after a pretty gruesome diary that we run on constant. Let's talk about time. I think we tend to overestimate, I said this in episode number 1, we tend to overestimate what we can do in any one block of time. And then we, most of the time, underestimate how long it will take. We have a pretty positive view of our ability to do lots of stuff. And often we'll see it as a, "I just need to get this done." And what I see is that people rarely account for curveballs. It doesn't mean they're not very good at coping with them, but they deal with them, but at what cost? When we create margin with intention, we are accounting for those curveballs. We're also accounting for other people's priorities. And if we don't do that, then this can cause us a lot of stress and overwhelm. And it's just generally not that enjoyable or good for us. So thinking about all the other variables, the curveballs, other people's priorities, other people's demands, other timelines, we need to think about how we create margin so that we have got time to change our plans, if that's what is required, but also to allow ourselves time and space for those, like I said, the big emotions, the big feelings, the self-reflection, because they're all the things that help us become a better version of ourselves. You know, Yes, I do love a bit of pressure prompting myself, and I don't think that's a bad thing. You know, a little bit of stress definitely enhances performance. I don't think we should be stress bashing here and say that, you know, that little spurt of adrenaline doesn't help us, because it actually does. But typically, most of the people that I engage with are at a tipping point that means they feel overstretched, oversubscribed, and they're just getting through. And they say things like, oh, but after this product launch or after this, you know, new project's finished, it'll be fine again. But it rarely is, because the work keeps coming. And if you don't learn how to create margin, then you're at serious risk of getting stuck in this perpetual hamster wheel of life and spend your life firefighting and reacting to everything that falls into your inbox and calendar. So it's a guaranteed way to zap the joy out of anything and will most definitely leave you feeling depleted. So if you feel like you are just going through the motions, albeit at high speed, then stay tuned to this episode and find out how you can change things up. So if you did listen to episode one, then you'll know I was talking about productivity and the narrative we've bought into about multitasking, but we're also subject to conditioning that praises output and places worth around productivity. So it's really easy to buy into not only the multitasking idea, but also to fill your diary with as many things as possible and wear that busy badge. So it can feel really hard to give yourself permission to rest, to restore, to reset. I mean, I used to cringe when my kids were younger and I'd stand in the playground and we'd chat, you know, you'd chat to the mums in the playground or the dads, and people say, oh, how are you? Busy. And then I'd find myself responding with, yeah, busy, really busy, but good busy. You know, that sort of justification of it's okay to be busy, but actually thinking, do I really want to be standing here saying that I'm busy, or do I want to be stood here saying, actually, life's working at a really good pace for me right now. I've got some really great work that I'm doing. I'm doing loads of stuff with the kids, but I'm also having a lot of time to rest and enjoy it. That's what I'd really love to be saying. And so I used to cringe every time I heard myself saying it, but it became like this habitual response. And I do sort of twitch slightly now when I hear other people say it. And it was interesting because I've clearly not quite shaken it off myself, because just before Christmas, I was in the post office. I have a lovely post office, postmaster in my local post office. And I'm in there on a regular basis with various packages to and from Vinted for me and my kids. And I was in the queue and I saw a magazine cover with an article that really caught my eye. And I can't remember what it was now, but it was something like, oh, that looks good. So I picked it up. And then I remembered how much I used to just love pre-kids, sitting down for, you know, an hour or so with a pile of magazines when I had plenty of disposable income and they didn't cost like £7. And just, yeah, just really, you know, losing an hour with a nice cup of tea or a glass of wine. And, you know, look at the fashion and the interiors and the recipes and all the rest of it. And I thought, do you know what? I'm going to buy myself a magazine. Then I saw another one and I ended up buying three magazines. Don't do things by halves. And I thought, do you know what? I'm going to just take an hour this week and just sit with some magazines and just chill. And I got to the counter and the guy said to me, I did my parcels and all my other bits and bobs. And then I put these three magazines on the counter and he put them all through the till. And he's like, someone's got plenty of time on their hands then, in a very judgmental tone, shall we say. And I wasn't quite prepared for that response. I mean, I wasn't prepared for any judgment, to be honest with you, on my purchases. And I found myself, I mean, it's ridiculous, responding to him. And I said to him, it's a bit like I carried a watermelon statement. I said, no, I'm just doing some research. I'm just doing some research. I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous that I was buying three magazines with my own money that I'd earned, and I was choosing to spend some time doing something that I really enjoyed years ago. And he felt the need to make a judgment on it. I mean, what's interesting is, would he have said that to a man? if a man had bought Watershed magazine or, you know, something else, would he have made any comment about or judgment about whether he had the time or not and whether that was okay or not? I think not. So those kind of comments and responses don't help women be okay, at peace, take time, give themselves permission to just do things that bring them a bit of joy, relaxation, rest, contrast to what they're doing, allow them some active rest or break from the sort of mental, cognitive, emotional load of life. So that's a little story for you that stuck in my mind about one of the things that I think makes it quite difficult for women to allow themselves that contrast so that they can create margin. Because you see, the magazine break for me was an active way of creating margin. It was creating space between my load. So that's the work that I do as a coach, facilitator, consultant. That's the paid work. But also the unpaid work of many working mothers, which, let's face it, I'm not going to have time to list all of those things on today's episode. Otherwise, it could turn into its very own trilogy. But we do tend to take the load in the household. And for me at the time, it was, other than the day-to-day stuff, which some of it, not all of it, I do enjoy, but it's the mental load that we carry. We were also doing some renovation work on the house. So I was managing all of that alongside what I was doing. And I think it can be, you know, we just see it as though, well, it just needs to get done. If I don't do it, no one else will do it. And that, I don't mean that in a way that's martyr-like. And side note, I do have a husband who puts his, you know, contribution out there. He's very hands-on. So this is definitely not a man-bashing moan, but, and rather, what I do notice, my observations, which I have shared with him, is that it's much easier, or it appears to be much easier from the outside, for him to say, I'm going to the gym, and I'm also going to go to the spa at the gym, and take 2-2.5 hours out of the day. And it's also very easy for him to, you know, book golf every Saturday, which suits me, by the way. Again, side note, I'm not man bashing or moaning here, but based on conversations I've had with men and women, men hold it in a very different way than women do. And I'm here to talk to you as a female leader who is probably managing lots of things, and you also may be managing children at the same time as well. And if you're not, I'm sure you've got plenty of other things that you're filling your diary with. So creating margin is today's topic, and it's really about creating healthy boundaries. It's about building rest into your everyday life. And, you know, when, if people had said that to me 10 years ago, I'd have just sort of rolled my eyes very loudly. It's like, you know, rest is for the weak. And, you know, I've got too many things to do to rest, and I've got endless amounts of energy. And, you know, I've still got pretty good levels of energy. But what I've learnt is that rest isn't about just having a lie in or collapsing on the sofa. Rest can be active, and it is about, for me, bringing more experiences into my working week that do help me be more creative, that do help me relax, that do recharge me, that do restore me. And, you know, creating margin is really intentionally setting time aside for those things to do what you love. So in my case, it is the odd magazine binge, although at those prices, I don't think it'd be that regular. But it is about going to the gym for me as well. The occasional spa, I don't really frequent there too much. But often it is about coordinating a walk with a dog with a friend of mine and just having a catch up. Sometimes it's just sitting at the top of the hill near where I live, if only for 10 minutes when I'm out with a dog on my own. But whatever it is for you, creating margin, it's about creating that distance or space between you and what is on your to-do list and the point at which you will reach your limits. So we need to get more honest about what are realistic and healthy limits. And we need to stop buying into this push-through mentality, because it's really not helpful if we want to build true levels of resilience and we want to be the best version that we can be for ourselves, for our families, for our friends, for our colleagues, and for how we want to live our life. So don't get me wrong, I'm all for the challenge, I'm all for the stretch, but not at any cost. And finding that balance or biting point for you is going to be a very personal experiment, as it has been for me. And it is a life's work, I think, because as things change around us and our priorities change, then I think we need to be constantly reviewing and resetting and evaluating, you know, what's working, what's not. Do we need more margin? Can we perhaps cope and perform and live a fulfilling life with slightly less? Probably not. I think probably more margin is needed for most people. And I think we need to prioritize this experiment because not only are we compromising our own potential and our own productivity if we don't, but my view is that we are modeling an unhealthy approach to the next generation of talent that is coming through. And one of the reasons that I wanted to start this podcast is because I have three girls, three teenagers, currently 19, 16, and 15. Yep. Very teenage focused here, very high levels of estrogen going on. And one of them has just entered the workforce. One of them is year 12, so thinking about what she's going to do next. One of them is choosing options, so also mulling over what she might want to do next. And I think whichever workforce you join, but particularly in the corporate world, which is where my experience is, so it's the one that I feel most able to comment on, I think there are some really unhealthy and toxic places to work. And there are some amazing organizations and cultures that really advocate for all their employees to create margin. And what's really important to me is, from a very personal perspective, is that I role model and teach my girls what it means to be worthy of that margin and how to create healthy boundaries. And yeah, shoot for the stars, go for the stretch, think big, all of that stuff. Have the ambition, have the big audacious goals. And how do you look after yourself in the process? And I think one of the things that my generation probably were taught, and it's still, you know, I hear it now still, work hard, work hard, work hard. We talk about working hard, and then at the same time, we're saying, be more resilient, be more resilient. And resilience, you know, became very everyday language post-pandemic or from the pandemic, when we were in the pandemic. And it's certainly something that I'm still seeing now in organizations. But as I think I probably said on episode one, resilience often in the corporate setting is actually do more disguised as be more resilient. And I don't think that's a healthy definition. So you might want to refer to this or think of this as a way of building your resilience by creating more margin. But I think, yeah, I want my girls and their friends and all other women to unapologetically own the fact that they are buying three magazines because they're prioritizing themselves. And I don't want them to have any shame or guilt about it. And I want them to do whatever their equivalent of that is and know that they will be better friends, colleagues, wives, girlfriends, just generally better human beings because of it. And I think we'd have a much healthier world. You will also be a better human being when you have margin because you will be better able to cope when the unexpected happens. So my definition is margin means that you are better resourced. You're resourced internally in terms of your nervous system, your mindset, and your general outlook. You might even call this, as I said, your level of resilience. And externally, you have margin when you have contingency time or wriggle room in your diary that you can borrow from and you can be flexible with. So it actually increases your agility in the way you approach life. So let me tell you a little story about an experience I had other than the post office. I was running a two-day workshop back in January And I was collecting a colleague en route, and it was a 1 hour, 45 minute drive to the venue, and we were staying over, and it was the kickoff of a big leadership program. So it was really important to me. It was really important to them. And it was really important to me that I showed up in a really resourced way with my own shizzle in check. And, you know, looking at the diary and the routes and et cetera, whilst I'm someone who doesn't arrive, you know, hours and hours early, I'm not an over planner for sure. In fact, you know, throughout my career, I was probably given feedback on many occasions that I was very good at winging it. But actually, I've learned it's not that I'm good at winging it. I'm pretty good at being resourceful with what I have. However, that said, when I first discovered coaching, the coach that I work with did point out that I was possibly living an adrenaline-fueled lifestyle, which of course I would now agree with, probably knew that at the time. And she got me to fill in this out this questionnaire, you know, a bit like the things you used to get in magazines when you were teenagers. Back to the magazine thing again, you know, you'd tick all these things, score them, and then it'd give you a score, and then it'd give you a little summary how adrenaline-fueled your lifestyle is. Mine was pretty high, and it wasn't a shock, but seeing it in black and white did sort of give me a little jolt to go, maybe I need to look at this. And so I started to create some different habits that meant that I reduced the adrenaline. So I used to, much to the disappointment of one of my very planned and organized friends and colleagues, I used to sail very close to the wind when planning my journey to venues and planning my sessions. And whilst I could always pull it off, again, it was at what cost? So when I look back, yes, I was running an adrenaline-fueled lifestyle, but actually I didn't create a lot of margin, and I didn't create a lot of margin for error. I didn't create a lot of margin for the unexpected. And whilst my resourcefulness meant I could always pull it out the bag and make it okay, that was definitely taking a toll on my general sort of well-being and health. You know, pumping your body with adrenaline on a constant basis is not really ideal. It might look good to the outside world. And again, I probably got lots of praise and recognition for it, which of course just encouraged me to do it even more. But when I saw this in black and white, I thought, okay, what are some of the things I can change here? And one of them was making sure that I, over time, have invested in managing my own state and just sort of grounding myself before any workshop or any session, and planning travel time with a reasonable amount of contingency that isn't tipping into sort of high level anxiety and like I say, over preparing. So back to the story, very long-winded way of getting here. So we were traveling down, I was collecting my friend, colleague, picked her up. And what I had done in terms of creating margin in advance of this meeting is I'd prepared all the flip charts that, well, not all of them, most of the flip charts that I knew we were going to need, because they were the flip charts that would stay on the wall throughout the 2 days. And I put some time in my diary the day before, and I sat down with an ice. It was January, it was freezing cold. And I sat down with an ice log fire, all my pens, big flip charts, and I literally just created. And it was really lovely to just be in that creative mode with no sort of pressures, feeling really happy with my flip charts. So put them very neatly into the boot of my car the night before. I made my breakfast in advance, put that in the car the night before. Outfit was laid out, checked the Waze map, looked at, you know, how long it was going to take, did all that research. Everything was sorted to the point where on the morning, I even shocked myself of how far I'd come, because I even sat down with a nice cup of tea at about 5:45 in the morning and just sat and drank my tea with no phone, no TV, no radio, no podcast, no nothing. And I just sat, and then I did a little 10-minute just breathing meditation. So I'd had like 20 minutes of real calm and peace and just grounding. So I jumped in the car, went around the M25. I even left early. And my friend then threw her stuff, not threw literally, chucked her stuff, placed her stuff in the boot of my car. And as she got back in the car, I said, oh, did you notice that I had the flip charts laid out? You've not thrown your suitcase and realized they weren't there, have you? Because if they've ripped, I'd spent all day the day before. And the reason I'd done them the day before was because in case there was some traffic on the M25, which, let's face it, is, you know, a very high possibility, I thought we won't get there and then have to pull all the flip charts together and it'll all be a bit stressful. So I thought they're all done. We can rock up. And if we're early, we just get time to chill and have a cup of tea or whatever. Anyway, she said, oh, I didn't notice, but let me just go and check. Got out of the car. No, it's fine. It's not crumpled your flip charts. We're good to go. And for those of you that have got a boot on your car with an electric button, you will know that you just press a button and it closes for you. But if there's something in the way of the catch, then the boot will sort of go back up again. You should also get an alarm. Well, it depends on what kind of car you've got. The alarm was going off when she got back in the car, but that's because her seatbelt wasn't fastened. So she put a seatbelt on. Off we set on this, over this roundabout to get on the dual carriageway. And we'd no sooner got on the roundabout. And there's a big truck behind us flashing its lights, bibbing its horn, quite aggressively, I have to say. We both literally turned to each other. There were some expletives exchanged in unison. It was like a little harmony. It wasn't particularly friendly towards this driver. And I was just like, oh, God, so people are so impatient, you know, feeling very elitist at this point because I'd had my nice mindful cup of tea and set off early and I had all this margin. And clearly measuring this guy against me, I was thinking, I know I'm not driving that fast yet, but give us chance. Anyway, we carried on. What felt like another couple of minutes, but was probably only seconds, still flashing his lights, still bibbing his horn. And I turned around and I said to her, expletive, bleep, the boot's open. She's like, oh my God, pull over, pull over. Nowhere to pull over. She's like, go further down here. There's a lay-by. I am now driving at like 10 miles an hour because we'd heard this thud as we'd set off. And because I had a huge pile of books in the boot of the car, I thought that they'd fallen over in the boot. Anyway, basically what had happened, we pulled over, she got out of the car and she's like, oh my God, your suitcase is gone. At this point, I threw my arms up and gasped, oh my God, my HRT and my migraine medication is in the suitcase. Shows you where my priorities were that day. And she got back in the car and I was like, are you joking? And I was actually really calm, apart from the arm throwing about the HRT and the migraine medication. And she said, no, I'm not joking. And I said, okay, was my leopard print shopping bag still in the boot of the car? And she was like, no. I was like, uh-oh, that had my laptop in it. Anyway, fast forward, don't want to make this a whole box set. We then did a U-turn eventually, drove back to where we'd started, and there is a gentleman litter picker, because I'd picked her up just at a hospital in Surrey, just because it was easy to sort of swing round. And he was the litter picker of the hospital, and he must have seen it happen, I don't know. And bless him, he'd put my suitcase on the side of the road. And the thing was, I'd taken, don't ask me why, but I'd taken a number of notebooks and journals because I thought I'd have loads of time to do that, not sure when, in the evening in between the 2 days of the workshop. So basically my soul and the contents of my head were all over the dual carriageway, covered in tire tracks and diesel. I'd bought two huge packets of flip chart markers in every colour possible. There was a rainbow of ink where someone had driven over them and they'd splattered everywhere. There were post-it notes everywhere. Basically, my whole kit bag. If any of you have seen a facilitator's kit bag, or if you are a facilitator even, you will know that there's plenty of stuff in there. And it was literally all over the road. Mucky, ripped, torn. My beautiful leopard print shopping bag was torn into shreds. And then I spotted their laptop. So the laptop was now, I'd say, a bit like a crescent moon shape is how I'd describe it. Anyway, we managed to pile all the stuff back in the car. I did surprise myself how calm I was. It's been a funny story to recount because most people gasp in horror. Even just losing your phone or your laptop is hard enough. But if you're on the way to run a workshop for 15 leaders with not a huge amount of margin to get there, and bear in mind we'd now detoured back and lost about 20 minutes, it wasn't great. So in my resourceful way, because I was adopting the creative margin approach, I was able to think quite creatively. And between us, we managed to arrive with only 10 minutes to spare, but that was okay because the flip charts were done and I could navigate my way around the lack of laptop. So the point of that story, there is one other than pure entertainment, is that whilst it isn't what I would have chosen, it was a great reminder that creating margin is a very helpful way to make sure that you can be your best self when the unexpected happens. And I know lots of people quote, oh, most of the things we worry about, you know, 99% of the things we worry about never happen. Well, I definitely wasn't worrying about carting my laptop and half of my life onto a dual carriageway, and it did happen. So expect the unexpected in life. And if you are resourced and have got margin, then you are going to be in a much better place to be able to deal with it. Early prep, tea, meditation, bit of inner resourcing meant that I was able to cope with that. It did cost me a bloody fortune to replace everything, but you know, it's only money. So on that note, that story illustrates beautifully, I think, the two things that can really help you when you're thinking about creating margin. And that is how I like to explain it, which is, how are you dealing with your inner resourcing? And what are the external ways that you are also creating margin in your life? And if you can start to play around with these two things, you will probably build your levels of agility, your levels of resilience. You will probably have a much more enjoyable life. I would even go as far to say your well-being will benefit from it, although I have no actual research other than personal experience. But that's just what I think and what I see when I'm working with clients. So inner resourcing, what I mean by that is making time, intentional time, or making a decision to incorporate things into your working week that restore you. These are things that make you feel alive yet rested. The things that help you live out your values. So for example, one of my values is vitality. So walking the dog and making really tasty, nutritious food feels resourcing for me. For other people, it might be an extra hour in bed, you know, might be rest in a very physical way. And again, there are lots of different types of rest. So what are the things that feel restful and restorative for you and yet can make you feel alive and that you're living in accordance with your values? That's how I would describe the inner resourcing. The other things that can help you resource yourself from the inside out are developing flexibility and agility in your approach to things. So as I said, I didn't used to be an over planner. I was definitely one in the let me just wing that camp. However, I think over time I've found that balance now where there's enough planning and contingency, but I've also got some flexibility and nurtured my resourceful nature so that I can deviate from a plan with relative ease. I think there's also something about learning to go with the flow of life. You know, the older, or rather the younger version of me, definitely would have had a right old tantrum about that, about the inconvenience, not really that helpful to get into that energy. You know, I couldn't change it. It happened. Would I have chosen it? Absolutely not. It was a huge inconvenience, but it's about going with the flow and not necessarily sugarcoating it, but looking for the learning of the experience. And then finally, cultivating trust in yourself and your decisions. And what I mean by that is you can create margin to plan for the unexpected, but I'm certainly not an advocate of over-planning. And I often coach clients that are those people that really struggle to engage in new things unless they are planned and planned and planned and planned. And I don't think that's helpful either. So I think cultivating trust in your ability to deal with something is also a way that you can resource yourself internally for life in general. One of the phrases that I heard many years ago that has stuck with me, that was from a psychologist, is that anxiety is when we overestimate a problem or a challenge and we underestimate simultaneously our ability to cope or deal with it. And that's something I try to instill in my kids whenever they're having moments of anxiety, and also share with clients, because there are people that don't plan at all and create their own adrenaline from that perspective, or too much adrenaline. And there are the people that plan and plan and plan to the point of they've just lost any trust in themselves to deal with something unexpected, because you can't account for everything that's going to happen. So again, everyone's biting point will be different with that. But just think about where you are. Do you tend to overplan or do you tend to wing it? And is there a point where you can make some adjustments? So inner resourcing really is finding the things that restore you, that make you feel alive, help you live out your values, and that are rest in whatever way you need rest. I think it's about developing flexibility and agility. It's about learning to go with the flow and cultivating trust in yourself and the decisions you make. But then there's the practical stuff. Most people will try and avoid the inner work, me included, over the years. However, I'm also a big fan of tangible, actionable, practical things that we can do as well. And I think both have a place. So the external ways that you can create margin are quite simply saying no to the things that don't necessarily restore you, light you up, help you make feel rested when they are in excess. So healthy boundaries and thinking about where you put your time and energy. Prepping in advance to the point where you are making allowances for things like laptops flying out of the car boot. But joking aside, as I said, there are situations where having things that you routinely do or a high stress or high stake events, it can really help to prep these things. So for example, I have a kit bag that is ready to go to run a workshop, so that if for whatever reason, I don't know, my life went, you know, deviated the night before I was going to a workshop, I know that I've got most of the things that I need in a bag, flip chart markers, post-it notes, you know, all those sorts of things. And I can just grab it and go. The other thing that I do that helps create a little bit of practical margin is a second toiletry bag for the gym. So I can just, you know, that's my gym version that's got smaller versions of everything in it. And I can just throw that in the gym bag without having to raid all the, you know, various places I hide toiletries, etc. So yeah, prepping in advance, but find the balance with that, because I remember when my daughter started work last year, and she's a planner, and in a good way, and without keeping it in check can potentially go, you know, maybe a bit too far. And she had checked train times and alternatives and a backup, and was having to travel quite far for the first time somewhere she hadn't been. So there was a lot of unknown, there was a lot of uncertainty, and that pressure of starting in a new job. And sometimes the universe has a funny way of nudging us back to perspective, because whilst I totally agree with the approach that she took, what then happened on the day was that somebody had jumped on the train line, which obviously is very tragic, and there is nothing you can do about it. And those sorts of things you can never really plan for, because she'd already put in a contingency and a backup train, and given herself plenty of time for any misconnections, but you can't plan for that. So it is about finding perspective into around rather what is appropriate to plan for, and what is the contingency and the backup and the plan B. But plan C, D, E, F and G isn't always necessary, and not necessarily a good use of your time. So find the things that, you know, you are routinely doing and you can prep for. Buffer time in between meetings. So I use a application called Acuity where people can access my diary. I was very nervous about that when I first did it, because I felt like I was losing control of my own calendar, because people, I don't necessarily have to accept the invitation. But this is something I hear time and time again. In fact, my husband said it just this morning. His first words this morning were, some expletive. It's put a bloody meeting in my diary. That means I can't go to the gym now this morning. I was like, well, have you accepted it? You know, where's the sort of autonomy here? Surely you've got to accept the meeting. Anyway, I digress one more time. But this is something that I hear time and time again when clients say to me, oh, can't do that. Someone's put something in my diary. Someone's triple booked me, which blows my mind, because when you're using Outlook invitations in the corporate setting, you have to actually accept the invitation. So I think that there's a lot of work to do on meeting management anyway. But even if you're not triple booked, have you got buffer time in between the meetings? I have a 15-minute gap in between all my calls, because basically I want to have the choice that I can go for a wee or make a cup of tea as a bare minimum, you know, just those, you know, basic human rights. But it blows my mind the amount of people that run from meeting to meeting to meeting and book them on the hour, every hour. So if all you do on the back of this podcast today is start to put some buffer time in between meetings, doesn't have to be 15, you might be a very quick weir. But put some time in just to give yourself some time to process, reset, and then you can go into the next meeting in a really good place. Overestimating time, watch out for that one. Notice how much you overestimate how much time you actually have and how much you might underestimate the time it actually takes to do something. So I recommend to clients on a regular basis that if you have, so it takes me, 30, 40 minutes to record a podcast, but actually I will plan an hour in for it, because if the sound isn't working correctly or if I've not turned my notifications on, I have to reset, then it just gives me that time. So I always overestimate time. And I do the same thing with clients when I'm building in design time so that I've got plenty of margin for things to change and the unexpected to come in. And if I don't use it, then I get to do something nice instead. And then the final thing in terms of creating margin is the stuff that does bring you alive is living aligned with your values, or it is restorative. Plan it in your diary. All my gym time, all my time, you know, my dog walking, all the rest of it might sound over the top, but if it isn't in my calendar, it is much less likely to get done. So when I'm going through my plan for the week, I color code everything, and the time for me is always in yellow. And it's a really great way to have a visual representation of, does this week have some time in for me to reset, to restore, to rest? And that, again, might be active rest with a dog walk or going to the gym. But even, you know, things like going to the dentist, I have in yellow Joe time coding, because I know that I'm looking after myself throughout the week. Whereas if I see a sea of green, that means I'm just literally running from one to one to one to one. And that will not leave me in a good place for whoever's at the end of the week. So color coding your diary is another great way to make sure that you can see that there's the right balance for you and you can play around with that, but also make sure you are planning in all the stuff that's going to make you feel better and well rested. So yes, there is some inner work to do and it may have created the eye rolling, but that is where the real opportunity is, I think, to let go of some of the conditioning about what it means to rest and reset, hence the name of the podcast, which is Your Permission to Pause. But, you know, the actionable stuff can be equally as valuable. And if you can do them both simultaneously, then you are going to be able to see yourself move to a much more productive version of yourself and feel good about it in the process. So, takeaways for today. I think, first of all, you've got to decide that you want to create more margin in your life, even if it means starting small. I'm going to encourage you to ditch the busy badge, so last season, and map out your ideal week, okay? So with space that you want to incorporate and then start working towards that. Leave a buffer, stop the back-to-back meetings. It's really not necessary and it's really not helpful in terms of what we're role modeling to other people. And then the final thing is, remember that we also need to create margin for the big feelings and the emotions as well as the tasks. So choose one, start your experiment, and let me know how you get on. Until next time. Thanks for listening to Your Permission to Pause podcast. Please rate or review and follow or subscribe in Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen. If you are a leader who wants to work smarter, not harder, so that you achieve the result you want without abandoning yourself or well-being in the process, go to joecowlin.com and find out more.